Hi everyone. So welcome back to Super Bugs, our podcast. I'm Tabitha and I'm joined by Jasmine, Davina, Lamia and Alex today. And we're going to be talking about antibiotic resistance. So according to the World Health Organization, it's one of the biggest threats to global health, food security and development today.
So do you guys actually know like where antibiotics were first discovered? Stuff like that.
Not particularly, but I heard that it was like it can be dated back to ancient Egypt, apparently.
Yeah, so like the first one that I think that most people typically know of is penicillin and like Alexander Fleming. But there's actually one before that that was discovered in 1909 by someone called Paul Ehrlich, and they found a compound which was actually able to cure syphilis in infected rabbits. And obviously syphilis is caused by bacteria, but at the time they didn't really know that that was going to become antibiotics or like antimicrobials. So they actually like called that a chemotherapy when they first discovered it.
Oh.
Yeah, and it wasn't until like 20 years after when the actual term antibiotics like became a thing.
Was that to do with when syphilis was discovered as being a bacteria, or was it
Yeah.
just to do with the drug?
Not too sure, but I know that they found kind of the compound when they were trying to cure syphilis and then realized this was kind of the first compound that they found that could cure something that was caused by a bacteria.
Wow. So just to be super clear to the listeners, antibiotic resistance is basically when bacteria stop responding to an antibiotic that they previously did respond to. So that can be for a whole different reasons. Does anyone have any they wanted to talk about today?
Yeah, so there are a few different mechanical ways that resistance comes about. So often brought about by mutations. This would be, for example, efflux pumps that pump out the antibiotic out of the bacterial cell, or decreased uptake of the antibiotic, or maybe overproduction of the target that the antibiotic is trying to attack. Does anyone else have any other?
Wow, so that's like a really active process. It seems like bacteria are really like trying hard to not be affected by these antibiotics, which I suppose makes sense because they're, just trying to survive.
Yeah, I guess they're evolving too. Like I know of a few as well. So microbes can alter the target as well. So like the actual receptors on the cell can change over time, which obviously if a drug's targeting a specific receptor, that bacteria can kind of evolve over time, or any pathogen in that case, to kind of change its receptor, change the shape so that binding doesn't occur, which I thought was quite cool.
Yeah, definitely.
That's so interesting. I didn't know about any of that.
So I thought we could move on to talking about the history of antibiotics. So basically, like what has caused antibiotics? I mean, we've talked about some of the first discoveries, but just sort of generally, does anybody know like why these, I mean, we've talked about the mutations, but why do they do this in the first place? Like what's causing this?
Well, I know that one big part of it is over, what's it called?
Overprescribing.
Yeah, which means that the more often they encounter the antibiotic, the more chances that there are for a beneficial mutation to come about, which develops into resistance.
So you're basically giving it more chance to fight off, give it more chances of survival then.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess if you have like a population of cells that your drug's like targeting or whatever, say like a random mutation occurs in one of them cells, and then you prescribe this drug and it kills off all the cells that don't have this mutation, that then that cell that's left that has that mutation, I guess that can then be left to kind of, there's no competition. All the other cells have kind of died, so it can kind of grow up within the host.
Yeah.
And then if you give that antibiotic again or whatever drug it is that's trying to kill off that microbe, it's got no competition now. It's not going to be affected by the drug. You're actually kind of giving it an environment to thrive in.
Definitely. And that brings us to a really important point about the microbiome as well. So a lot of antibiotics that are used seem to be like broad spectrum antibiotics, which kill sort of any gram negative, any gram positive, some even kill both. And everywhere in our body, basically, we've got really complex ecosystems of bacteria. And the last thing you want to do really is wipe all of them out, because as you were saying, Davina, that
Yeah.
then leaves those that are resistant to, like you say, literally grow without any inhibition, any competition. So yeah, it's not just about like almost what they're doing. It's the fact that they've got free rein sometimes once you do use antibiotics.
And that's kind of scary when you think about like pathogens evolving over time and the kind of future of these like pathogens in future and these microbes in future. We're kind of like giving them free will to just kind of become more resistant and develop these mutations, which in future will just make it even harder for us to be able to treat them.
Yeah, definitely. And especially with the, I would say, somewhat limited understanding of the microbiome still. I mean, we have some idea that some microbiomes are beneficial to humans, but there's also some microbiomes that we don't know the function of them. So the thought of just wiping out the microbiome is also quite scary.
Yeah, I agree. And I've got a few names of some different kind of species that, so I came across this thing and it's called the term the escape pathogens. And these are particular pathogens that are actually now just drug resistant because of the overuse of these antibiotics and antimicrobials over time. So there's like a good handful of different bacteria, big bacteria and different fungi that are actually just completely resistant to any kind of antibiotic and any type of antifungal because they've just been overused, and they're called the escape pathogens.
Wow, that is really scary. So sorry, Alex.
No problem. I think I've heard of the escape pathogens. Isn't it an acronym for the, it's like ESKAPE?
Yeah, you don't want to hear me try and pronounce the names of the species. No. Yeah, but each of the letters stands for a different species.
Right. Sorry, Tabby, go ahead.
That's all right. I was just going to say, let's perhaps rein it in a bit less scientific. So do you want to talk about what major events has caused this to happen? So we've talked a lot about what's happening at a molecular level. But as far as I know, a lot of the cause for this, you know, we've talked about the exposure to the antibiotics and, you know, them not killing the resistant ones and stuff. But with stuff like prescription, I know we've briefly mentioned, but there seems to be a real problem in this country and all over the world of, you know, inaccurate prescriptions or people only taking a few days of their antibiotics because they start to feel better. There's perhaps like a lack of education as to the fact that you do need to take the whole course. I mean, in some countries, I don't think in the UK, but in some countries, you can just buy antibiotics over the counter.
Yeah, I can add in here. Yeah, I've noticed in India, especially, generally, there's a bad practice of just going to the pharmacist and the pharmacist just prescribes. I mean, they do the prescription of whatever antibiotic they see fit. And then because of that, it's just people have access to these antibiotics, which they just keep using over and over and over again. So there's common names, common brands that are just prescribed, and then people just keep using them. And it's not really regulated that well. I would say it's just not. Here it comes into the whole realm of enforcing regulations, I think. There could be laws in place, but it's more to do with how people don't have the knowledge to like what actually happens if you overuse them in that sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's that not understanding the risks. I mean, there's like a common misconception that if you've got a cold or like a chesty cough and you're bringing up coloured phlegm, that means you need antibiotics. And like, that's such a myth. Like, if you know the scientific kind of understanding behind like what causes like coloured phlegm, for example, it's just like white blood cells that are dying out, which actually is a positive sign that you're getting better. But some people see that as, no, I'm really ill, I need to go and get antibiotics. And in a lot of cases as well, I think kind of healthcare professionals can be quite guilty of actually just prescribing antibiotics when you're not really sure, because I mean,
yeah, over prescribing then,
over prescribing them, definitely. Like, it's kind of just an easy fix in some cases. And I think, Tabby, you mentioned about not finishing a course of antibiotics as well, and I think a lot of people are guilty of that. Like, you start feeling better within a couple of days, but it's a 7-day course and you don't complete the course and you're not taking it all, and that's really dangerous as well, because like I said, you're kind of not you're giving the pathogens chance then to keep reproducing inside the host and allowing more chance for that mutation to occur, which can develop cause resistance to develop.
Definitely, I agree with that. And I think even, Lamia, you were talking about in India, but in this country, perhaps like the regulation is tighter. But like Davina was saying, there's nothing enforcing people actually taking the full course. I mean, I know I've seen in my parents' bathroom cabinet, you know, half finished courses of antibiotics that they've kept for like years. And it's like, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with half a course of antibiotics? But I think a lot of people in this country, and particularly from like older generations, especially because again, like Davina was saying, the healthcare professionals over prescribing them, especially back in the day, it used to just be an easy fix. It was like, oh, if in doubt, antibiotics. I mean, luckily everything is a bit more strict nowadays, but in a lot of people's minds, antibiotics are still these magical drugs that stop people from dying, which obviously is fantastic, but that mindset does need to shift now.
That stemmed from like wartime, if correct me if I'm wrong, but from my understanding,
it became popularized in during World War II.
A lot of like soldiers that were like getting infections in their wounds and stuff. It was a similar time to when antibiotics were still first discovered, and they were just given to everyone, and it was like, wow, this is amazing.
They were a magical drug.
So just to quickly add, just a fun fact for you. About a third of the antibiotics prescribed today are just not needed, actually, like it's predicted. So it's still quite a very, it's still, even though in countries such as England where the regulations are tighter, it's still a very big problem.
We need to work on that. So I'm going to move us on. So I thought that we could talk about what the current sort of treatment plan is for these antibiotic resistant bacteria. So I know that you talked about some multi-drug resistant bacteria, Alex and Davina. So what is the actual treatment for these? I mean, I've heard of, you know, last resort antibiotics. Does anybody know anything more about them? Just briefly, that is.
Yeah, from my understanding, it's I think a lot of the time when pathogens have kind of got some resistance to antibiotics, a lot of healthcare professionals try different strategies, and I know a common one of that is combination therapies. So, kind of using more than one antibiotic in hope that the bacteria within the body or the pathogen within the body won't be resistant to both. So we'll try out two at once and see if that works. But again, that's just, it's, I guess it's a short-term fix. It's not a long-term kind of solution to the problem.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I've seen like awful combinations of bacteria, you know, in treatment plans.
Yeah.
That is like 7 weeks of this one and then 6 weeks of this one and then 3 weeks of a different one. And it sounds awful, because I was going to say about these last resort treatments, they're often a lot more toxic.
Yeah.
And I don't actually know why that is. I don't know if their specificity is like different and perhaps they affect human cells in some way. But I know that they can be really toxic, and it's sort of, you know, you have to be on death's door to warrant taking something so toxic.
I do know of a few different kind of therapies that are arising, though, at the moment, to try and kind of not use these compounds and try and use different ways of targeting these. So one that I found that was quite interesting is, I don't know if anyone else has heard of this, but the use of silver nanoparticles. So what you can silver nanoparticles.
Oh, I've heard of that.
So they're like metal nanoparticles. They've got really like unique physical and chemical properties, which make them really suitable to target drug-resistant pathogens. So they can work in loads of different ways. But one of the kind of routes that they use is releasing silver ions. And this triggers the release of reactive oxygen species. And this damages the DNA and the proteins within the pathogen. They can also interrupt the electron transport chain and other signaling pathways. So this causes damage to the actual cell of the pathogen, and it's quite specific. So it wouldn't really harm the host cell, but it will like target the pathogen specifically. And this is obviously a way that, because it's kind of got these different ways of working, it releases reactive oxygen species. It disrupts the cell wall and the membrane. It damages the DNA. Like, there's lots of different things going on that it's less likely for the pathogen to become resistant to that.
Wow, that's really interesting. I had no idea that that was a thing.
Yeah, me neither.
So I think previously that there was a lot of discussion about whether they were actually safe, but I think in 2018 that a study showed that they can actually be used safely and that they weren't as toxic as it was previously believed. So maybe that could be something for the future.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see if anything comes of that.
Yeah.
Well, this has brought me on to the last point I wanted to talk to you guys about, which is sort of, yeah, the future of antibiotic resistance and what are we going to do? So, yeah, that's a really good example of something that's not necessarily, I don't, would it be categorized as an antibiotic? I'm not sure, but, you know, alternative therapies, yeah, that seem to have a lot of promise. I wanted to talk about the use of antibiotics in animal culture, actually, not culture, agriculture, because, it, you know, according to the World Health Organization, in some countries, like 80% of all the usage of medically important antibiotics goes towards animal agriculture. And the horrifying part is that most of that is for animals that are healthy. So it's not even, you know, animals, you know, like cattle or sheep, pigs, whatever. It doesn't go towards those that are sick and have infections. It's used as like a preventative measure and also like potentially to promote growth and like allow them to grow bigger, which in my opinion is really horrifying. But a systematic review in The Lancet found that restricting the usage in the animal agriculture sector can reduce the antibiotic resistant bacteria in those animals by up to like 40%.
Wow.
But that's a big number.
Yeah. I mean, as we've talked about, having antibiotics is a breeding ground for resistant bacteria. And I don't know what the education sort of, you know, the flow through from papers down to farmers. I don't know what that is like. And, you know, in all the different countries as well. But it seems like these are being just mass.
Yeah, is there any regulation on that? Like,
I mean, I would like to think there would be, but I was going to say, I mean, I don't know how much it's trickling down because we know that having antibiotics promotes these resistant strains of bacteria. So it seems, you know, backwards to give that to a healthy animal because the animal's going to end up having these suddenly antibiotic resistant bacteria.
Well, it's technically what humans are doing anyway. I think, was it Jasmine who said a third of cases, antibiotics aren't even needed?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's kind of like that tear off. Do we actually need to be giving out antibiotics? I mean, the human immune system is so well evolved. And is it a case of sometimes just letting patients have to fight off these infections using their own immune system and like you trying to just use over-the-counter medication to try and relieve symptoms? And actually, a lot of these cases, unless they're very severe infections, we can probably overcome them ourselves with our own immunity. We've got things in place that can fight against these pathogens without actually maybe needing a compound to come in and do that for us.
Well, I was going to say that. I mean, obviously, it depends on the severity of the infection. Yeah. Obviously, sometimes they really are necessary, but perhaps they shouldn't be the sort of first port of call like they perhaps used to be and are still a little bit.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it as well is it's a global issue now. The governments know about this antimicrobial resistance. It's going to be a big issue in future. So it's a case of now, I think, investment from governments, pharmaceutical companies. We can't just keep relying on antibiotics for the future. We've got to be proactive in looking at new strategies, looking at new therapeutics that can actually help tackle this problem and try and evolve faster than the pathogens can, like find new things that can target these things that are more foolproof than the pathogen just evolving to overcome it.
Definitely. Well, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention says they say that there are three main ways that we can prevent this from getting worse. So the first one is obviously to prevent infections in the first place, which is, you know, sanitation, hygiene, good practice in hospitals, you know, in just day-to-day life. I mean, the COVID pandemic has taught us a lot about, you know, the spread of disease. And by us, I mean, just the general public. You know, we've learned a lot about how to prevent ourselves from getting infections. They also mentioned improve antibiotic use to slow the development of resistance. So that comes back to the education that we were talking about, and the regulation for prescription and for buying over-the-counter antibiotics.
Yeah, even if like, I know this might not be feasible, but even if it's a case of when, say, a patient goes to the doctors or the hospital, like actually ensuring that it is a bacterial infection, like taking a sample, like just checking in the lab for what species is causing this. I know it's a bit time consuming, but in the long run, I feel like that will ensure that
Unless the patient is in real critical condition, yeah, that they're gonna die that day, yeah, then definitely.
Yeah.
So I think that we'll wrap it up there. Let's pose a question to everybody at the end. So what do you think is going to be the number one, the number one thing that is going to help this? I'll start. I think education, definitely. And not just for people that already know about this stuff. I think for everybody, like in schools, in workplaces, it should become way more common knowledge that antibiotics are not an easy fix anymore. I mean, I've seen the adverts on the TV, actually. I don't know if anyone's seen them, about basically like, don't use antibiotics unless you absolutely need to, like don't randomly take them and stuff like that, I think is really important.
That's a good one, actually. I think mine would be a bit more broader, but maybe just like everyone taking more initiative, just thinking twice before you're going to your doctor. Also, even as healthcare professionals, taking the initiative to realize there's a problem and realizing, by yes, you're prescribing a drug which might help your patient in the short term, but in the long term, is that really going to help them in the future? It's just going to make their life harder. So I think that using your initiative and also innovation from pharmaceutical companies, from the government, to invest more, to actually try and think ahead and think in the future to kind of look into new therapies as well.
No, I agree with Davina. I think there should be, we should not rely on antibiotics as a first port of call. And I also think that there should be tighter regulations about prescribing antibiotics rather than just giving it out to people who say they have like an ear infection.
Yeah. I would want to add on that. Davina did say, if governments, I don't know how it works, but if you can fund other means of, so you said something about silver nanoparticles, right? So if research on that end can also be funded, so this is very, very far into the future, but if you can look at alternative means and then fund that, and then, you know, maybe move past use of antibiotics altogether. Like,
I think that's critical. I think there needs to be pressure, yeah, from the government onto pharmaceuticals.
Exactly, exactly. It's like pharmaceutical companies, they see a lot of profit in this. It's very profitable. The market is there. And so in manufacturing, if they're given incentives to research different ways of, yeah, combating diseases, but not necessarily through antibiotics, then I think it's like the right direction forward.
Yeah, and I think right now, though, I don't think it's to these pharmaceutical companies. I don't think actually looking at this, it is profitable at the moment, because antibiotics exist. Antibiotics are what are used. So until it becomes a thing that actually we're going to wean off the use of antibiotics, then it gives that incentive to pharmaceutical companies. Okay, let's look at new strategies. Because at the moment, there's no incentive there, because at the end of the day, you're going to get prescribed antibiotics. You're not going to get prescribed silver nanoparticle therapy. It becomes required to do that.
Yeah, I agree with all of your good points. And then also, just to finish up quickly, in the cases for the pathogens where they're resistant to all possible antibiotics that we know, like the escape pathogens, then the alternative therapies and pushing for that is probably the most important thing in my eyes. So yeah,
good point.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, I want to thank all our listeners for listening to Super Bugs for this episode. And yeah, bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.